Blog Talk Radio.
Related to the development of Israel as a state, and then roughly 32 years after the
Balfour Agreement, you have the State of Israel being founded in 1948. So it does show that. But I think as far as what we're seeing with predictions of the future, the one that I think is the most imminent and the most important is that one. But I also think there's another one that's interesting. If you look at the template, there are these movements that began around 1974. There were also ones that began around 1979 and around 1978. With those two, they converge in the year 2010 because, you know, the template sequence is 36 years, but there's that 32-year interim step. Well, 32 years from 78 takes you to 2010 and so forth. Those two streams of time converge on the year 2010, and a lot of important things are going to be happening around this time. Israel,
now, I wonder, because you claim that in 73 was the Yom Kippur War, and then again you go into a time pattern here for it, and I was just very curious as to how what we can expect there. For instance, sequel is yet to be fulfilled at this date, but it generates the following forecast around the year 210, 11, or 12. Israel will be at war with Syria, Hamas, and possibly Egypt. Do you really see that? Do you see anything that happening?
You know, it's interesting. Israel itself, I think, sees it. They have been, they recently came out. I mean, I wrote the book with that prediction some time back, but they came out, their Defense Department, saying that they're expecting to be fighting a two-front, possibly a three-front war. And
wow.
I believe that they're anticipating it. And the instability in Egypt and the instability in Syria are of grave concern to the Israelis. So I think they're going to see that. I also think that they're very concerned with agitation coming from Iran and also Iran's nuclear program. And it clearly shows that they will be trying, at least trying, to take out the Iranian nuclear facilities, which will be very difficult to do.
Oh, I think so, too. Even though I know that they have recently they just imported some bunker busters there from the United States. So,
yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. But I was kind of, I don't know if you have anything on the Palestinian. I didn't notice anything really on the Palestinian issues, but they so correlate with the Israelis. What do you foresee there with this sudden proclamation that they've asked for this application to the UN? Do you see Israel falling apart there, or do you see them staying firm and, of course, fighting this three front war? I mean, what do you think will become of Palestine?
Well, I don't have any predictions regarding that because I don't see it on the template, or I haven't studied it closely enough. The one thing I do think you will see is that Hezbollah, you know, Israel has had several incursions into Lebanon over the last few decades, and they're now coming to a inflection point, and where they're going to be invading Lebanon to take out this Hezbollah threat. And I think that to remove any Syrian influence as well, it'll be a very serious move into Lebanon, and then it will be.
Say, could you speak a little closer to the phone, please?
Sure.
Only because your voice is fading out, but.
Happily. Can you hear me better now?
That's better. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think that you're going to see is a massive incursion of the Israeli army into Lebanon for the purpose of rooting out Hezbollah to the best of its ability. And that won't be a short-term project either.
So you think they're going to go back into Lebanon?
I do. I do definitely think that.
Oh. They're going to be very, very busy in the next year if that's the case. I mean, dealing with Lebanon, Syria, Iran, and Egypt. I don't know. Do you foresee what do you foresee as far as the United States getting involved? Do you see anything there? Any kind of how we play into that.
Well, there is an interesting thing that occurred around that 1978 date, which would move in a new direction around the year 2010. Around 1978, you have 1979 when the Iranians invaded our embassy and took it over. And so it was a very aggressive act of students. You could call them students, terrorists, whatever. But they nonetheless made a movement, Iran made a movement against the United States. So you would expect to see this thing somehow be reignited around the year 2010. So the U.S., even if they don't want to be involved in an Iranian incursion to take out their nuclear facilities, they will become involved. Because if Israel does try to take out those facilities, you're going to see Iran trying to close the Straits of Hormuz. That's what they've threatened to do, and I'm sure that they are fully capable of doing it for at least a period of time. Once they do that, who's going to steam in there but the U.S. Navy to open those straits, because we have to have that lifeline of oil open. So we would become involved.
My question, I've got another question here. Based on your 30-year sequence, and you've got other sequences, but this one on your site, it talks about rooted in time. And a 490-year time cycle found in the Book of Daniel is a powerful one, it says, and a host of many important movements in history. You've got it broken down here. We will then look at some of the movements appearing in 1954, 36, and 1990 timeline. How do you what do these relate to as far as how is this 490-year time cycle come into play?
Well, the template is based largely on 70-year time cycles. There are also 100-year time cycles, but the 70-year time cycle is basically 70-year time cycles get you to 490 years. Now there are two ways that appears in the template. One is the 70-year cycles just keep repeating themselves on and on and on. So 490 becomes 980, becomes so forth and so on. But there's also a 500-year period where you have 770-year time cycles plus 10 years to give you a 500-year period, which is very important. But anyway, this 490-year period comes from the Book of Daniel, where he talks about 77s, and it's a powerful one. Around the 1954 time frame, you had, for example, a very important movement, the modern genetics revolution, with Crick and Watson's discovery of the double helical shape of DNA, and that happened in 1953. You would expect it to move in a new direction around the year 1986, and it did. We started to look at the possibility of launching the Human Genome Project in 86. The Congress passed funding to check in to see what kind of instruments were necessary for this. Could it be done? And then 4 years later, at the culmination phase, the Human Genome Project was kicked off. So you can see this genetics, which is a very important event this or area, how that conformed to this template. And I'll give you another one that's kind of interesting. People conformed to the template too. So in 1955, you have the initiation of movements, and you also have the birth of individuals. And so we have Tim Berners-Lee was born then. And when did he, what did he do? Well, 36 years later, 1991, we have the World Wide Web, which he developed, and it went live in 91 with the first website. So,
but he was actually born in 55?
Yes.
Wow.
And his life conforms to the template as well, to that important sequence.
Hmm. And then, 1991, you have the Internet, and 30 years later, which is now, what can we expect to see?
Well, no, it's 20 years later. And the way the template works is it's not as if the culmination, the formation of this World Wide Web is the start of a new sequence. It might be, but it has to do with how these time cycles work. They're extended from 6 BC, and they come to a starting point, and then 32 years later they move in a new direction, and 4 years later they culminate. So that's kind of how it works.
I see. All right. So Has there been any major I'm trying to think of the major events that have happened since then, or even since 19, aside from the internet, and how it coincides with this conflict. What else has happened in the last 30 years, or 20 years, I should say? And what do you expect to happen in the next 10 to play into that template of 30-year cycle?
Well, there are a lot of important things that have happened if around that 1974 period that will be coming to achieve their culmination in the next year or two. One of them was the initiation of many different terrorist movements. Israel will be the recipient of a great amount of terrorism in the very near future. They were experiencing a couple of events around that 74 date. The 1972 Munich Olympics was one of them. They also had the Air France hijacking that was taken to Entebbe, Uganda in 76. And so you see those sorts of things occurring to Israel. And then in 2006, you have a terrorist act that resulted in the starting of a war, and that was when Hezbollah launched a strike against an Israeli patrol group and kidnapped a couple of Israeli soldiers, and that started the Second Lebanon War, and that was in 2006.
That's right.
Now, all of these things involve kidnapping Israelis. So it would point to something occurring around this time period right now where they will once again kidnap, hijack, do something to Israeli citizens that will result in the larger war with Hezbollah.
Hmm. All right. Now with that, do you think that'll ignite Syria and Egypt and everybody else?
You know, it will have a way of spreading, because Hezbollah is basically a proxy army for both Iran and Syria. So when Israel takes them on, they're not just taking on Hezbollah. They're basically going after Syria and Iran indirectly.
That's right, yeah. So, well, what other predictions do you see here? As far as Russia's involvement, it looks like you have some interesting things here on the on Russia and in the Baltic states, the Ukraine, for instance. Anything you see coming up in those areas?
Again, massive amounts of terrorism are going to break out, and they will certainly affect Russia in a very, very serious way.
Really,
Russia. For example, Russia, you look at the 1974 date, they actually had some strange occurrences where they were attacked within the Red Square at that time. Then you go to the 2006 date, and you had a number of big, big terrorist attacks and strikes. One of them was when the Chechen terrorists took over the school and all those children were killed, hundreds of them.
Right. That was about 10 years ago or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2004. And so 2004. It points to an even larger culmination around this time.
There was just another big terrorist thing in Russia recently, in the last year or so.
Yeah, the airport where they bombed that.
That's right. That's right. And that was that this year or last year?
Last year,
I forgot. It was recent though. They have been having a lot of problems there. But I'm curious as to really what do you see for the United States in your timeline? I mean, if you look back at when we started, which was 1776, and work it forward, and those 30-year cycles are 100-year cycles. Have you been able to see anything any patterns that we seem to be falling into, or anything that we should be looking at?
Yeah, the 70-year patterns. I'm not going to go into the full 500-year pattern and go into the complexity, but I'm just going to give you the dates. There is this new direction that takes place in this 500-year pattern, which occurs around 1774. And, of course, the new direction for us was the birth of the United States.
Right.
Now, the United States in this new direction phase starts off, as new directions are, typically do, in weakness. It's pretty weak. It has its own capital burn by the United Kingdom and everything. But what happens in history are these movements that begin in that new direction phase come to achieve a culmination in which they are dominant in their sphere. And you see that occurring, of course, with the U.S. being the world's sole superpower. Typically, the countries that occupy this stage of dominance in this last phase of the 500-year pattern, they don't lose that position of dominance. So the United States, though it looks weak and confused and bumbling, it's going to remain a dominant force for many years to come.
Well, that's a positive note, but it doesn't look like it at this point. But next to all the other countries, except for maybe China, we're dealing with something rather strange. What is your what do you see for China right now? U.S.-China relationship. I know you wrote something about that.
You bet. It's going to become even closer. I don't think we're going to be enemies or rivals. I think we're going to be competitive partners. For example, we started, when did our relationship with China start? Well, 1972 with Nixon's trip to China,
yep.
We reopened relations with Communist China. Well, you would expect it to move in a new direction sometime around 2006, and it did. We set up the Strategic Economic Agreement, which kind of irritated the folks in Europe because they looked upon it as the U.S. trying to start what they called a G2 summit, where the two great powers in the world get together to decide upon the fate of the world.
And right.
It is an important meeting, but it has yet to generate important results. But the template is typical of these new directions. They start out weak, and they come to fruition. What it points to is a breakthrough economic agreement that will occur between China and the U.S. Now,
we haven't done that as yet, have we?
No.
I don't know what even if they're working on anything.
It's predicted to occur around 2011, 2012.
Oh. Well, that's now, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is there any, do you have any insight as to what they're working on, or is there, has there been any news or anything on any breakthroughs?
No, just one thing that happened in the news recently that kind of points to my prediction being on the right track. One of the reasons why I said this would occur is because there will be also a new direction in the relationship with the U.S. and Taiwan. And if there's one thing that's near and dear to China, it's Taiwan and what they view as our interference in that relationship with Taiwan. So I think that we're going to be throwing Taiwan under the bus, unfortunately, and that will help us secure this economic agreement.
I'm just trying to think here. What other things do you see? I noticed on your site you were talking about Roe versus Wade forecast. And around 2010, you said Roe versus Wade will severely be limited or overturned, likely putting the decision in the hands of individual states. So how did you derive at that concept?
Well, here's the thing. That was an interesting one. When I developed this template and I saw the sequence working its way out and consistently through so many different historical cycles, I thought, and I also noticed this, that there was this 180-year time cycle and 110-year time cycle, and they were very powerful throughout history. They marked some very meaningful events, and they both converged on the year 1974 to initiate movements. And so I thought, wow, let's look at 1974 to see what happened around then so that maybe I can see if this has predictive capabilities for things that could occur around 2010.
Right.
And I immediately saw 1973, Roe v. Wade, and I thought, well, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Now, I had discovered this this sequence idea sometime around 2004, and I wrote to a pastor. I said, based on this template, we should see the Supreme Court move in a new direction, and the only way I can see that happening is if they get a couple of new justices to sort of tilt the balance towards the conservative viewpoint. And that's what happened. Rehnquist, when he died, he was replaced by another conservative, so no difference. It was Roberts came into power.
Roberts, yeah.
But when Sandra Day O'Connor retired, she was replaced by Alito. And so you had that slight shift in the balance. The first part of my prediction has come true. The second part is that around the year 2011, 2012, at the latest, 2013, Roe v. Wade will be severely limited or curtailed or overturned by the Supreme Court.
I'm curious to see if Obama loses here, or if if we wind up getting a Republican as president. It would be quite frightening, actually. What do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, Leo, I've got some bad news for you on that front. I don't think Obama is going to be reelected. And the most frightening part of that prediction, and it is that the template strongly suggests that there will be an assassination attempt on President Obama. So even if you're not a supporter of Obama, you should be praying for the safety and security of our president.
But yeah.
It doesn't mean that an attempt will be successful, and I pray that no attempt even occurs. But,
how did you derive at that? What was the what cycle are you using there? What are you using to predict that?
Okay, so think about 1974 as the start date of around which many movements in history occurred. Well, what happened in 1975? Two unsuccessful assassination attempts on Gerald Ford, and within a couple of weeks of each other, which was really odd.
Yeah.
What happened in 2006, around that time? Well, most people don't realize, but there was an assassination attempt on President Bush. He was speaking in Georgia, I think Tbilisi, Georgia, the what was formerly a Soviet satellite.
Oh, with the hand grenade, yeah. Yeah, the hand grenade that was tossed in that didn't go off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this suggests then that there will, there's that new direction. Well, about 4 years later, it should come to a culmination, and that would suggest a potential attempt in the very near future.
This year, within 4 years, or what?
Within 2011, 2012 is what I'm predicting, because
11, 12,
usually within a couple of years. There's another frightening part of this prediction. The 144-year time cycle is very powerful. When you extend it 13 times from 6 BC, you arrive at the date 1866. Well, what happened in 1860, around 1865, or 1866? You had the 1865 actual assassination of Abraham Lincoln. Okay. Well, then 46 years later, around 1902, what happened? Well, you had the 1901 assassination of President McKinley. So you have two assassinations occurring on this 144-year time cycle. When does the 144-year time cycle appear again? Well, 144 plus 1866 gets you to 2010. That's when it appears again. So that's another frightening.
I was surprised that it didn't show up somewhere around Kennedy's assassination.
Yeah, it didn't. That was it doesn't mean that they're only going to occur on this 144-year time cycle. It just suggests that there's a possibility of it occurring again on this cycle.
But there's a good possibility of this happening, though. That's bizarre. How about in 81? Did you see anything in 81 when with Reagan's assassination or his attempt anyway?
Yeah, very good. That when was the first assassination attempt on a president of the United States? It was 1835. President Andrew Jackson. Somebody came up to him with two loaded pistols, fired both of them, and both of them misfired at point blank range. So
That was 1835.
1835. That was the first. 1835, it was the first attempt on a president. And then what do you have 30 years later? You have the actual assassination of Abraham Lincoln in 1865. Well, 1981 was 30 years before 2011. You have the assassination attempt on Reagan, and so you have the 30-year time period. It's spooky the way these things are lining up. But
Wow.
I hope they keep good care of our president.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah. But, yeah, that is spooky. I didn't think you'd have that kind of a progression with assassinations. But why are the years... here's something. You have it on your template on your website, which I suggest anybody go to, templateoftime.com, and see some of these things. But it says, why is the year 210 so important? And maybe you can move into that right now. Why last year was so important, and this year and next year.
Well, the one thing that really struck me about the year 2010, and the reason why I have a chapter in the book on, actually a couple of chapters in the book on the year 2010 and what should be occurring around this time period, is three very powerful time cycles all converge on this date. So you have these three different points of time. You have the initiation time, you have the new direction time, and you have the culmination time. So in 2010, you have the culmination of the two powerful time cycles, the 180 and the 110-year time cycle. Well, there's another one that's very, very powerful, and it's associated with revolutions. It's a 64-year time cycle. A lot of the things in the template are based on squared numbers. They appear in history. They appear on the template. So, for example, the 490-year thing, well, that's basically 7 squared times 10. With the 64-year time cycle, you're looking at 4 cubed or 8 squared, and it starts in 1978. Well, the time before that, when did it start? Well, it was 1914, when you had an extraordinarily revolutionary time with World War I, the Bolshevik Revolution, and everything else.
Yeah.
But taking it to our day, it started in 78, which means that 32 years later, around 2010, this revolutionary time cycle will move in a new direction. And think of the revolutions that it marked. Well, 79, you had Khomeini come into power. You had Saddam Hussein come into power. You had the Soviet Union invade Afghanistan. You had assassinations of attempts of Pope, president, and all sorts of crazy things were going on around that time period. So it goes in a new direction around 2010. And then the one I just talked about, the 144-year time pattern, it starts in 2010. And so a lot of these movements, that the things that are occurring in this interweaving of history, they will culminate 36 years later. So it's a very powerful time.
So the Arab Spring and the revolts everywhere, even in the United States now. This is all in 2011 that most of this started, even though it probably started in 2010, but it seems like everybody went on the streets in 2011 this year.
Correct.
What's your take on that? I mean, are we should be seeing a real surge, global surge of revolution. Right about now, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and the 2010 date is just an approximate date. It usually occurs within, I call it a cycle date because it's a date produced by a time cycle. So the actual events of history will occur within a year or two of that date. For example,
right.
The 1974 date, you have the Nixon and China trip was 1972. It wasn't
right.
A perfect match. And so the 2011 Arab Spring, I did not see that coming, but then again, I was not so specific as to look at Tunisia and see if I could possibly find out that a poor Arab man would immolate himself and trigger this whole mess. It's just been one of the more remarkable events in history. But it shows you how in this revolutionary time period, it doesn't take much to get something started. It will happen, and it will spread like contagion. But
you saw Mubarak's downfall, and that was quite significant. But so you must have seen within that cycle, you must have seen a revolution, not just in Egypt, but this whole that cycle that you're talking about, that 64 years time cycle there. That must have been that was just one of the outcomes of it.
Right. I saw Mubarak, and the reason, there's so much to look for in history. I mean, there are just billions of possible
storylines.
Oh, God,
yeah.
So why did I look to see if Mubarak would be kicked out of power? The reason why was because the template suggested that Israel would be at war with Egypt, and I couldn't imagine that occurring with Mubarak in power. I mean, he didn't love the Israelis, but he was staunchly supporting this agreement that they had in place because it got them billions of dollars from the U.S.
Right.
So I thought, well, maybe he's gone. So I looked at him, and I thought, okay, 1975, he started his career as vice president, and I thought, well, okay, that points to a potential culmination around the year 2010 because it started in 75. But what happened around the 78 time period? Did anything happen that suggested a leadership change? And this was within 3 years of the time period, but in 1981, Sadat was assassinated, and I thought, wow. That strongly suggests then that that Mubarak will be out of power, and that's what I put in the book.
Yeah, no, that was a great prediction. What do you see for Egypt now? What do you or in the next during this time frame, do you see much more? By the way, I meant to ask you, did you see anything with Gaddafi falling apart there in Libya?
No, I did not. I didn't look at it. But here's the funny thing. After the Arab Spring started, I was told, some people asked me, what do you think is going to happen with all these countries? And so around February, I started looking into it, and I started projecting, predictions. And I said, the one thing that is not clear is Gaddafi being ousted from power. I don't see it on the template. And I said, it doesn't mean that he's not going to be. It's just that it's not shown on the template, whereas it's clear that certain others are going to be leaving power. People like King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia will be leaving power, and that could be due to just his age and health issues.
Do you see that in the next year or two?
Yes. I also predicted that Saleh, President Saleh of Yemen, would be out of power, and then 4 months later, after I made the prediction, he was in an assassination attempt. Now, he's back in Yemen, but the template shows that this won't last. He's going to be on. He's on his way out.
So, yeah, you've been pretty much on the money with the nightmare that's going to happen. What do you see economically? Have you seen what kind of in these patterns that you've developed? In these 144 and 64-year time cycles, seems like the 64-year time cycle is relevant to these demises economically and economic collapses. As we had 64 years ago, roughly, we had the Great Depression.
Well, what I see with this current situation is the following: you had 1973, so around the 74 date, you had the Arab oil embargo, and that caused us to go into a steep recession. I mean, production just fell off a cliff. Well, you had a similar thing occurring around that 1978 date. In 1979, when Khomeini came into power, there was another oil shock resulting in another recession. These two oil shocks converge around the year 2010. So I'm not certain what's going to cause this oil shock. My guess is it would be an attack on Iran and closing the Straits of Hormuz and possibly Iran trying to take out some oil capacity, through its offensive might. But whatever happens, it's pointing to an oil shock and another recession of a very severe nature based on this action. So that's I think there's going to be a double dip. I don't know that it's going to be caused by this European thing, but there will definitely be another leg down, unfortunately.
And that'll be this year or next, right?
Yes.
Right. What kind of predictions did you see? Did you do any predictions for Europe?
Europe, people don't pay much attention to Europe other than this contagion issue with Greece and all. And they look upon Europe as being just this weak patchwork of nations, and it's like it's a failed experiment. But according to the template, Europe is the main event. it will become not only a superpower economically, which it really already is, but it will become a military superpower as well. This current fiscal crisis is going to drive the nations of Europe to be more centralized. There will be fiscal union followed by political union. And if you recall, Germany was prostrate. They were just totally knocked unconscious almost in 1933 when Hitler came to power.
That's true, yeah. That's true.
And within 6 years, this one nation became a continent-straddling superpower. So imagine the might of Europe if it becomes politically and fiscally united. It will be awe-inspiring and something that would not be a very, very good outcome.
As far as what? Why wouldn't that be a good outcome if they became a superpower?
They are military ambitions. You know what? It's like I think what Hitler once said when somebody was watching all of these armies on a parade, and the diplomat asked, "Herr Hitler, why do you have all these armies and everything?" And he says, "They are not here for just marching. I mean, they are." Once you develop that power, people with power are just too tempted to use it, and they do.
Well, I can see that, but with all of the treaties and every other thing that, and of course with the wars that Europe has gone through over the many centuries, for some reason I don't see them as a military superpower anymore. I just don't see that.
In relation to
China or the United States or,
based on
they have much more to shed their military responsibilities over to the United States. And, of course, we've been so eager to pick them up, you know. But for some reason, I just don't see them as a superpower anymore. They can't even negotiate on their own currencies. So I don't see how they could be an organized, how they're going to be that, you know. I can see it in the fiscal states possibly, but even that, England and France, together they could barely knock out Gaddafi. So it's like I'm very curious to see how they would ever be able to coordinate that kind of strength and power again to be a threat to anybody.
Well, one of the things that the book follows, and this is perhaps the most important thing that it follows, is the evolution of the Roman Empire. It's Daniel's fourth kingdom. In the book of Daniel, it talked about there were four empires that were going to exist until the fourth kingdom was replaced by the kingdom of God. And that was Babylon, which was then defeated by the second kingdom, Medo-Persia, which was then defeated by the third kingdom, Greece, which was then defeated by the fourth kingdom, Rome. So this fourth kingdom was to be in existence until the end of time. And what the book does is it shows its evolution over time. Now, Daniel's fourth kingdom was depicted as a ferocious beast, 10 heads, 7
crowns.
10
horns or something, wasn't it?
10 horns, yeah. And you see that same beast occurring in the great beast, the Revelation of John. It's the Roman Empire. The description is too perfect for it not to be.
Right.
Where is this Roman Empire now? Well, it's currently in the shape of the EU, the European Union. And when did the European Union, when was it born? Born in 1992. What time cycles are associated with that birth? When you extend 366 time cycles, 366 year time cycles from 6 BC, you come to 1992. And that's just the way Rome fits this time pattern is just extraordinary. So I've got 2,000 years of history backing up these assertions that seem crazy. I admit that they don't look like they could possibly occur. But then again, in 1933, no one would have thought Germany would be much of anything because they were so pathetically weak at that time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. For some reason, it's possible, I guess it's possible, but between now and
next year, I just don't see that happening. You know,
well, it's not going to happen
within the, by 2012 or even by 2020 that they would that Europe will even come out of this nightmare that they're in right now, and the debt and you know, the infighting, and the I mean, it's just a mess. So
I agree with you.
For some reason, I mean, it was one thing that Germany by itself and through the aid of the United States, you know, funding Hitler so much money and getting him started, that which is fascinating. But he was able to, and the German people were able to create that that incredible industrial
war machine,
yeah. And we, on the other hand, and Europe, even Europe doesn't even have the industrial power anymore to create that kind of thing. They're dependent totally on Asia, you know, for their goods. Some of this stuff is built in, but there isn't much. There isn't really much. We're building most of the military equipment, us, and of course now China. We're sub, you know, even Israel is involved with it, with war munitions manufacturing.
First of all, I don't think it's going to happen. Them become a military superpower 2011, 2012, no way. I think that would be more around the – well, I outline that in the book as to what the timetable is for that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I also point out, and this is an interesting thing, we are largely protected by our blessed location having two oceans that border us and the most powerful navy in the world. And one of the things that Europe will find very difficult to develop, no matter if they become a military superpower or one nation or whatever, is a navy, because it takes about 7 years to build a super carrier. And, you know, nobody's been able to build one except for the United States. Our super carriers are more than twice the size of the largest carrier that you have in the European fleet. And the reason why that's significant is these super carriers, because based on their size, that's what their firepower is, how many planes they can carry. So
right.
It will be a very, very difficult thing for them to catch up in that regard. But planes, tanks, weaponry, that doesn't take quite as long.
No. But I, for some reason, and maybe it's beyond me, but I just don't foresee the Europeans really do not have any more desire for big wars, you know.
I would agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, they may. I mean, for instance, England has managed to. I don't know how they managed to do this and keep their pound, or the euro is going into the crapper, but. But the euro, I mean, not Europe, but England and the United States have managed to economically, you know, conquer the world, you know, essentially. So I don't know. We are the military might, if you will. England is still the financial center of the world, if believe it or not. What's happened is China and Asia have become the manufacturing centers of the world, and this is the way it seems to have split up.
Let's look at the one thing that you said though earlier about how they've had so many wars they don't want them, et cetera.
Right.
There is no question about that. But I would propose to you that the people of France, when Napoleon came to power, had no great appetite for conquering all of continental Europe and then going into Russia. It's the desire of a certain individual who's the charismatic leader of a nation.
I think at that same time, I mean, we were in another revolutionary cycle there, between 1792, right up through and through Napoleon's period, but especially in France. But that whole century, if you will, the 1774 to about 1830, the world was in a revolutionary fervor, you know.
Three chapters
just like we are now
dedicated to that period, because it was a series of revolutions: the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Industrial Revolution chain transformed the whole world in the way it operated, and on and on and on. But here's the thing, Leo, that's important. Those movements on this template, and this has occurred consistently over the last 2,000 years, they are now achieving their culmination in this time period, which ends around 2030. So we are going to see those movements that were so disruptive, they haven't even achieved their culmination yet, and they are achieving them right now.
Amazing. Amazing. I've been trying over time. In the last 4 years, on our Friday night shows, I've had a guy named a friend of mine, George Dixon, and we've been discussing the Mayan calendar and a number of different, and the Hopi prophecies and so on. And we've been studying timelines regarding these events and the predictions of these prophecies. And right now, as of October 28th, of this year, is the actual end time of the Mayan calendar. It's the end of the Mayan calendar, which moves in again into 2012. But the actual end of the calendar is not December 21st, like everybody thinks, of 2012. It's actually October 28th, and we're starting, and oddly enough, what we've been doing is tracking these different things that have happened over time. And what you're saying, for instance, the things that all in the Mayans had, the Mayan calendar was a calendar of creation. And what it did is it predicted all the different movements that take place. And we and oddly enough, in 1999, we entered a period called the ethics period, and in 1999 you had you had a major thing called the internet that came through in a very big way in 1999, and then and that broke, and then you had they predicted, and well, there's a whole bunch of different days. If you're not familiar with it, but the cycles, but there's different cycles. There's a there's actually 13 periods in creation with the Mayans, and their accuracy was beyond belief, how accurate they were in their prediction, and even up to the crash of 2008 with the financial collapse, which was in the fifth night of the galactic period, and then it goes on to the fifth night and the sixth day and seventh, which we're in now. And this is the end. I mean, this is the end time. And the next period, which is the last period, which they call the universal period, is when mankind becomes co-creators with the universe. And we ascend into another dimension, into the next stage of our spiritual and physical evolution. So it's a fascinating concept, and the accuracy of their prophecies have been mind-blowing. But I'm noticing your templates are also seem to be following along with many of those other predictions, which were based on astronomy. Their calendar was created that way through 3,500 years ago. But do you see anything at all as far? I know that you see this year and next year as major things, but do you see any kind of any kind of religious or spiritual or evolutionary cycles that seem to be ending in this period and beginning again? You know, what do you see that could be interpreted as?
Well, we will definitely have a chance to see very soon what happens with the Mayan calendar with respect to this evolution of a higher consciousness,
right,
or whatever it is that they're predicting. But I don't show that on the template. It doesn't mean that it's
right,
not going to occur. It just means that, you know, that there are many things that the template hasn't shown and won't show because it just takes so much time to look at everything.
For instance, natural occurrences. Like, for instance, we're now in a position where you know, scientists know that every 26,920 years, the Earth goes into a polar shift, okay? And we are now entering that phase right now where the Earth is undergoing tremendous gravitational pull, and it's slowing down, and that's leading to so many of the earthquakes and the weird weather patterns and so on, as well as we're undergoing a 26,000-year period of electromagnetic interruptions that's happening because we just there's this huge electromagnetic cloud, all right, that's entered the solar system and our solar system, and it's now it's engulfed a number of the different planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and all that, and now it's coming closer to us. And they predict that by 2012, you're going to see that it's going to be here. And if that happens, you know, it could actually fry out our entire grid and, you know, throw us back into the 1800s as far as, you know, technology is concerned, because nothing will work. Electricity, any electricity won't work because of the chaos of this, that this incredible cloud will create. So, and this is NASA that's talking about this. This is scientists that are talking about this. And this is one of the biggest fears that they have right now. Coming up in the next 6 months, maybe, as well as what it's doing to this magnetic charge, if you will, that if it comes in, what it will do to the Earth's surface. And because the Earth's surface is about 95% of it is made out of quartz, so the Earth crust. So what will happen is if this electricity or this electromagnetic field comes into play, you know, in such a strong way, what it's doing, or what they're afraid it'll do, is charge the quartz, affect the quartz within the Earth crust, causing tremendous upheaval of the Earth crust and, seismic problems all over, earthquakes all over the world. So
that's
one of the major problems
upheaval
that we're facing coming up next year. But I don't know, are you... Any of your predictions based on that kind, on any of the natural or scientific or geological occurrences over the last 100 years or 150 years, or have you noticed anything like that in your time cycle?
Well, one of the things that I've looked at is the nuclear power accidents that have recently occurred.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when was Three Mile Island? It was, I think, around 1978, so around that time cycle, I think it was 79.
Yeah, it was in the 70s, yeah.
And then the new direction phase comes 32 years later, around 2010, and what happens? Well, you have the Fukushima tremendous meltdown. This points to an even larger nuclear catastrophe around the year 2014. And then what makes this really frightening is a very powerful time cycle, one of the fractal time cycles, starts around 1984. It moves in the new direction phase around 2016. Well, what happened around 1984, but 1986 you had Chernobyl, what was, at least until perhaps now, the worst nuclear accident ever. So around this 2014-2016 date, you have these two sequences converging that have involved a series of nuclear accidents. So that's something the template is forecasting. But we live in an tremendous age of upheaval, and one of the things that I think the template tries to do is give people a sense of peace. Not all that's going to happen is going to be bad, but the good news is it's all happening according to a plan that's unfolding. It's not chaotic. This isn't a random flow of events. And
right.
I think that if you study the history and the way it unfolds for 2,000 years on this pattern, you come away mm-hmm. with that sense that this is not chaos. This is under control.
Right. And the last thing I wanted to mention tonight was basically the way history unfolds on 400 or 500 year time patterns with such perfect consistency is astonishing. And now you go into Revelation and all of these other different areas, but how is it based on 500-year time patterns?
Okay. Basically, the Bible has a fractal vision of time, and a fractal is simply this. It's an irregular shape that's repeated at all scales of measurement. So a hill is like a mountain, is like a mountain range. These are irregular
right.
shapes that are similar at different scales. Now, time is the same way in the Bible. They say a day is like 1,000 years in the eyes of the Lord. And then they have these quirky little time patterns like they have Pentecost, which was the Feast of Weeks. It was seven-day periods plus one day. Then they have Jubilee, which is seven-year periods plus one year. So you can see that fractal relationship. Well, all I did was I extended this, and I said, okay, let's extend the scale. Let's make it 770-year periods plus 10 years. And that gave me a 500-year pattern of time upon which history unfolds in an astonishing way.
Right.
So the Bible has these different time patterns, and I just use them. The time cycles come from the Bible. 110 years is the number of years that Joseph and Joshua are reported to have lived, and 180 years is the number of years Isaac is reported to have lived. So I use these time cycles from the Bible, and it constructed this template, and history is following it quite closely.
I really end on this sentence that you wrote. It's on your blog or on your website. But it says that where was that? The story that begins in the Old Testament and continues in the New is obviously important, and for this reason, the Fourth Kingdom was to exist until it was replaced by the Kingdom of God. And this introduces the second theme, the spread of the Kingdom of God, or the reborn believers of Christian faith are the kingdom in embryo before its establishment. And the final theme is one that is dear to the heart of God, the persecution of the saints by the Fourth Kingdom. And according to Scripture, people will be judged according to the way they've treated the saints. And you quote, I'm not sure, it's CMT. Matthew 25:31-46. And then it says, and the end will come only after the full measure of saints are martyred. And then again, Revelation 6:11.
Yeah.
He says, we will witness the ebb and flow of this drama as it begins in pagan Rome and then continues far more savagely under Christian emperors, headed up to the Holy Roman Emperor, and only in other regions once ruled by Rome. And the way this history unfolds in four or five hundred year patterns with such perfect consistency is astonishing. So we're now to look at the end will come only after the full measure of saints are martyred?
Based upon the prophecy of Scripture. And so
right.
since I received all of the time patterns from Scripture, I use Scripture as my guide for the history and for prophecy. And that's
right.
that's what the book of Revelation says must occur first. But the thing that's so remarkable about the Fourth Kingdom is the way that when it was pagan, it did persecute Christians. But when it was Christian, it persecuted them far worse. I mean, the
exactly.
blood.
No, it's true. It's bizarre. And only at the end of this time, okay, when the full measure of saints are martyred, okay, will the end come.
That's
so,
according to Scripture, yes.
Yeah. So I don't even know. I mean, are we under, well, I don't know where, I don't see, well, I'm sure there's still persecution of saints everywhere, but there's definitely persecution of people everywhere right now. And,
yeah, I think that you'll see an outbreak of it, though. It's happened in stages. The first phase of this was in this 500-year period we're living in, were the wars of religion, and they broke out on schedule on the template. The next phase was initiated by the French Revolution with its de-Christianization campaign, which was exceedingly thorough and very effective. And that occurred in this new direction phase. And then since then, you know, basically with the French Revolution, you had a secular, in many cases atheistic, government that was anti-Christian in power, and they've been followed by secular, atheist, anti-Christian governments like the one in Russia, which resulted in over 20 million Christians being killed, and the one in China, which basically crushed the Christian movement for a time. What we'll see, though, is the emergence of something similar occurring in Europe is one of the things that's projected. And again, if you look at it from current events, you think, no way, how could that possibly happen? But again, under a charismatic leader, how could Europe all of a sudden decide that they, or Germany decide that they wanted to kill all the Jews in the world? I mean, it just takes a charismatic leader to lead a nation in the wrong direction.
Well, that's true. And anybody that's waiting for Christ to return, I guess, is, you know, I have no idea, to tell you the truth, Tom, what to expect. But I'm really looking forward to October 28th to see if anything significant happens. And I've got a prediction, and based on that, that on October 29th, you'll probably see a major stock market crash. Of course, October 29th, 1929, was when the last major stock market crash occurred and brought us into the into full recession, depression. But
I'll keep my eyes on it, too, and I'll check up with you and see what you think.
Yeah, because that's kind of a prediction I'm making, that we might see that 29th number come up again, which would be October 29th, 1929, and again October. You know, in October 27th, 1987, I believe it was, we saw another major stock market crash, and I remember that well. And
October has been unkind.
What's that?
October has been unkind to the markets.
Yeah, and then and now again, I think we may be looking at that October, end of October scenario, especially with the Mayan calendar. End time sequence being there, I just feel the energy is coming this way. I don't know, and everything we're seeing, the Mayans predicted all of this happening in the last time, in the 2011, 2010, and all through the 21st century, up until 2012. This is the cataclysmic catastrophe, end of the empires and end of economic systems, and then we change. Of course, in 2012 we move into the Aquarian age, all right, as opposed to where we're in the Pisces ages. This period we're actually changing. Every 2500 years, the world moves into another period, and we're entering the age of Aquarius. So,
October 28th. If nothing convincingly obvious occurs, what will you think then?
Well, I don't know. What the Mayans claim is it's kind of like your template. It could be that time, and it could be a year later, or you know, but it's within that period. It's within that frame. But the odd thing was is that on March 9th of this year, the ninth wave was to begin, okay, of the Mayan calendar. And the ninth wave was bringing in the final year, or the final times. And oddly enough, what happened in that period of time where it was unbelievable regarding the world, I mean, you had the Arab Spring, you had the revolutions there, and in March, and then and right after March 11th, all right, you had Fukushima, all right, which was the biggest catastrophe in the world, all right, and then a series of things, and then again in March 20th, you had the invasion of Libya by NATO, and so on and so forth all down the line, there's all the things that have happened this year. And they predicted this year to be the final collapse of the economic global economic system, and this looks like that may happen as well. But it's just, you know, as far as all of the things that we have talked about on our program and the many, many different texts and timelines and so on that we've talked about, everything has been right within a matter of a few days, right? From the original predictions of the Mayans. So why October 28th could be or couldn't be? But oh, they also predicted the recent earthquake patterns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the alignments of Elenin and the other, there's a dwarf star as well that's coming into play, a blue star. And the Hopis predicted this, that the end times you would see a red star and a blue star, okay, in the skies. And once that happened, then the end times would come. And that's happening now. I mean, Elenin just aligned with the Earth yesterday, or this week, actually. I think it was supposed to be the 26th and 27th. But Nibiru now, or not Nibiru, the blue star, is supposed to come in to play within the next month, and that's when by October 28th, you'll have the full alignment of these two stars with the sun and Mercury, Earth, all. So you'll have this tremendous gravitational pull coming into play, as well as the emergence of this electromagnetic cloud that's already been seen coming into the system now.
There's no doubt but that we live in very interesting times, and certainly would indicate that we live in interesting times. Are you all right?
No, I'm okay. I just choked. I've got a cold, and I just choked.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now.
Better soon.
I'm fine. But anyway, Tom, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really enjoy it.
I enjoy it too.
I look forward to seeing more of your predictions coming together. And look forward to October 28th. All right.
All right. We'll be in touch.
Hey, in fact, it'd be interestingly, put in Mayan calendar October 28th, 2011, and you'll be amazed what comes up.
Okay.
Google that up. All right?
All right, sir. It's great talking to you,
Tom. All right. Have a great night, and I appreciate you being on.
You too. My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Take care. And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And you want to check out Tom Paine's website, templateoftime.com, and his new book, Template of Time. And thanks for joining us tonight, and have a pleasant evening.